It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell in for Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a meteorologist will give his forecast for this year's tornado season in Wisconsin.
Right now, we're kicking off a three-part Wisconsin Public Radio news series. In his 2010 campaign for governor, Scott Walker made a brown bag promise to voters to run government more like the way they run their own lives. And while he spoke in general terms, Walker did include enough specifics so that 4 years later, it's possible to take a look at how he did. In the first of a three-part series on Walker's promises by the numbers, Wisconsin Public Radio's Sean Johnson has this report.
Given all that's happened in Wisconsin politics over the past 4 years, it's easy to forget that there was a time when Scott Walker talked about his brown bag promise on a near daily basis. He featured it in his TV ads.
Hi, I'm Scott Walker. I pack a brown bag lunch so I can afford to pay for other things, like Wisconsin's high taxes.
He talked about it in his stump speech, including at the 2010 state Republican convention.
It's based on three simple principles. First, my grandmother would love this. Don't spend more money than you have. Secondly, smaller government is better government. And third, most importantly, people create jobs, not the government.
4 years later, on a sunny Saturday at the Dane County Farmers Market, the brown bag promise is far from people's minds.
The brown bag. No, can't say that. No. I remember.
I don't remember that term. No, the brown bag promise. I don't recall that. No.
The brown bag promise. No, it doesn't. Sorry.
Vaguely.
That was Kurt Stelflew, Jeff Bybee, Carl Harder, and Jen Engel. And while they had mixed reactions to Walker's promise once they heard it, they did agree on one thing. It's a bit vague, and pieces of it are hard to pin down. But you can measure the first part of the promise. Don't spend more than you have. Walker lived up to that in his first budget, says Todd Berry with the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance.
You'd have to say so. I mean, that first budget was very austere. I don't think anybody who lived through that period would say it wasn't a pretty tough time.
Simply put, Walker's first two-year budget cut state government's general fund until what it spent was less than what it had. But Berry says Walker's second budget is headed in a different direction, starting with next fiscal year.
We're going to spend, it looks like, more than we're going to bring in revenue. And the reason simply is we have some big tax cuts.
The nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau projects that in year two of this budget, the state will spend $559 million more than it takes in. And that's just the general fund. To really dig into this promise, you have to look at the transportation budget. Road construction continues throughout Wisconsin this summer, even though state government faces some serious issues when it comes to paying for it. The state borrows to pay for construction projects, sort of like most people use mortgages to pay for houses. The trouble in Wisconsin is that borrowing keeps going up, with no end in sight. John Peacock directs the budget project at the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families.
At a time when the economy was doing well and coming out of a recession, that's the perfect time to reduce the amount of bonding, but instead we've increased it.
It's not that people don't know how to fix this, but Walker has shot down proposals to raise taxes or fees to pay for roads. At the same time, his budgets are spending more. Walker did not create this problem, but he is making it worse. The Fiscal Bureau says total state indebtedness is projected to grow by more than $1 billion under the governor's watch. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up tomorrow in this series, Sean will take a look at Governor Walker's campaign promise that smaller government is better government.
We turn now for perspective on Governor Walker's budget promises to John Peacock. We just heard him briefly in that story. John Peacock is research director at the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families, where he directs their state budget project. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's talk about how debt and deficits work in Wisconsin. We can't run a deficit like the federal government does. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So how do we handle, we can still have debt though, so it's a little different thing. How does debt work in the terms of our state budget?
Well, the state can issue bonds for major projects like transportation projects and that kind of thing. And the state's been doing a lot of that. And as the piece indicated, bonding is increasing or has increased since the year before Governor Walker took office by $1.2 billion, and it's going up by another $300 million in 2015.
Where are we seeing spending going up to generate the need for those bonds? Is it mainly transportation?
Well, that's part of it also. And we still, even with that additional bonding for transportation, we still have a significant hole that we're going to have to deal with there in the transportation budget in the next session. But in addition to that, the governor's first budget refinanced a lot of bonds, and it didn't refinance them in the way that we think of it with respect to our home mortgages. What it did is essentially restructured them so that we didn't make payments in the short term and had bigger payments off in future years.
So it allows us to make that budget happen this year without a deficit, but maybe leaves a problem 2, 4, 6 years down the road.
Yeah, exactly.
And is that what we're talking about? We've heard the phrase structural deficit in Wisconsin for, I'll say, at least 20 years. Is that what we mean when we say structural deficit?
Yeah, different states have different ways of measuring what are called structural deficits, and ours is a bit unusual, but how we measure it could be a topic for a long discussion another day. In brief, though, a structural deficit is a measure of potential red ink in the next biennial budget. It's a mismatch between what the current revenues look like and the current expenditures look like. Sean's piece mentioned that in the second year of this biennium, state general fund spending will exceed the general fund tax revenue by $560 million. We're able to do that because we carried over surplus money. But when we spend down that surplus money, then you're setting yourself up for a structural deficit in the next biennium. And so, you know, and some people point out, well, we can grow our way out of that. You know, the structural deficit calculation doesn't take into account potential future revenue increases. And that's true. But it also doesn't take into account potential future spending increases. And so to say that we're just going to grow our way out of it, you have to assume that revenue growth is going to exceed your increased needs. And that often isn't a very good assumption to make.
Well, let's stay on that revenue side. Times were tough. Tax revenues were down through the Great Recession. We are in a slow but apparently real recovery. Doesn't it make sense to anticipate some kind of revenue growth as the economy improves?
Sure, it does. And there's been revenue growth in the last couple of years. And as we realized that revenue growth and as it came in greater than expectations for a while, the legislatures did what they oftentimes do going into an election year. They promised a lot. They used that surplus in this instance for pretty substantial tax cuts, and as we saw back when Lee Dreyfus did that 30 years ago, as we saw when Tommy Thompson did that 20 years ago, and Democrats have done as well, that going into an election year they oftentimes give back surpluses in ways that are unsustainable. And that's starting to look like it may be a problem because the latest revenue collection figures are starting to look pretty soft. And we could really be in for a challenge in the coming fiscal year and the next biennium.
Well, there's been a long history of this, as you say, Republicans using surplus for tax cuts, Democrats using it for increased spending. I believe when you had Tommy Thompson, Republican governor and Democratic state legislature, they had a deal to do both at the same time. And there's been an ongoing criticism saying, let's use some of that surplus for a rainy day fund to balance out, say, a big recession that might be around the corner. Have we started to try to do that?
Wisconsin's been near the very bottom for decades in terms of setting aside money for a rainy day. We finally started making progress in recent years, and I give legislators credit for that, and especially last year and the year before, they did build up the rainy day fund. It's far below where it needs to be, but it started growing. But then this year, as revenue came in greater than anticipated, they suspended the state statute that required half of that unanticipated revenue growth to go into the rainy day fund. They wanted to provide larger tax cuts, and so that statutory requirement was inconvenient, and so it was temporarily suspended.
We're talking with John Peacock. He's research director of the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families. We're talking about the state's budget and Governor Walker's scorecard on making good on his 2010 budget commitments.
And we'd like to hear from you, too. How do you score Governor Walker's performance on the budget promises he made in 2010? How have budget policies affected the state of Wisconsin or affected you personally? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can also chime in on our Facebook page.
We continue our discussion now about budget promises made by Governor Scott Walker in his election campaign in 2010 and what degree he's been able to realize them. John Peacock stays with us. He's research director at the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families and director of the State Budget Project.
And we'd like to hear from you, too. How do you see Governor Walker's budget policies playing out in the state? Do you think he's made good on those promises he made back in 2010? How have they affected you and your community? You can join in our discussion at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us, talk@WPR.org.
And we heard in our piece from Sean Johnson earlier what Governor Walker said in his brown bag promise was, don't spend more than you have when you're a state government. John, there are different schools of thought about that. Some economists, some in politics say in times of economic downturn, do spend more than you have, borrow to do it, to stimulate the economy, to meet the needs of social services. It may sound like common sense, don't spend more than you have. Is it more complex than that?
Well, it is more complex, and certainly during the recession, that was a very hotly debated issue and at the federal level, it continues to be an issue of some debate in terms of how strong is the economy now and at what point should we start pulling back in terms of federal investments that help or that could help the economy grow faster. But here at the state level, now that we're in what's supposed to be about the fourth, fifth year of the admittedly slow recovery, this is really the time when we need to be socking away as much money as we can, putting it into reserves so that when we face that next downturn or when we have more tornadoes that were a lot more serious than these ones the other day, that we're ready for that rainy day.
And do we miss opportunities to make key investments in the state if we're focused too much, if that's possible, on a balanced budget?
Sure. I think that there is that risk, but we do have the obligation at the state level to balance the budget. I think it's one of the reasons why we want to build up the rainy day fund when we can, is that then when we're in much slower periods of economic growth or decline than we're facing right now, that then we can dip into that and even things out.
We'll go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We have Casey on the line in Madison. Casey, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, so I just think that some of the policies, specifically Act 10 and balancing the budget on sort of the school and public worker sectors, is short-sighted in terms of the desire for long-term job creation and the education that's required to do higher-skill jobs. It seems ironic to me that we would say we need more jobs in the state, but then spend less money on education.
Casey, thanks a lot for the call. So Act 10, part of Governor Walker's fiscal policies, he said needed to limit union bargaining power in order to save money at the local level and at the state level. How did that fit into this discussion, John?
Well, it it's complicated. Mm-hmm. I mean, on the one hand, there's just the whole debate about the merits of the way that the governor balanced the last budget. And I think it's a different discussion than we're having today. But for whatever it's worth, I tend to agree with Casey that the kinds of cuts that we made, I think, are cuts that have hurt the state economy by taking money out of the pockets of low-income families, cutting the earned income tax credit, taking money out of the pockets of public sector workers. I think that's been one of the things that slowed down our economic growth. But you know, people can argue different sides of that. I think on what those cuts did do, the very austere budget in Act 10, as Todd Berry pointed out, whether you liked it or not, it did eliminate the structural deficit. But now this session, we've seen backsliding because the legislators who professed that it was so important to get the budget back into the black then got preoccupied with larger tax cuts this session. And so they've recreated a structural deficit.
But how does that structural deficit compare, say, to the deficits in the late 90s?
We've seen considerably larger structural deficits in many other years. So relatively speaking, where this one stands right now, based on the latest calculations, isn't too terribly worrisome. On the other hand, as we look at the revenue collections in recent months, and now over the first 10 months of the current fiscal year, revenue is actually below where it was in the previous fiscal year. That was not anticipated. If it turns out that was the effect of something more than just a temporary blip, the polar vortex or whatever, if that becomes a longer trend, both for this fiscal year and the next fiscal year, we could be back where we have a pretty serious structural deficit again.
What kind of changes would you like to see in the legislature and from the governor, whoever that might be, next year, to try to rein in a potential structural deficit?
Well, I'd like to see us, for one, to honor the commitment made in the statutes that when we do have additional revenue growth, that we use that to beef up the rainy day fund. At least when the economy is strong, we ought to be doing that. I think we also there's a statute on the books that Governor Walker has postponed by 4 years that would require the state to put more into the general fund balance, that a cushion that you have at the end of each fiscal year in case revenue turns down that you can use without even tapping into the rainy day fund. That requirement was enacted about 20 years ago, and each governor and legislature keeps postponing the day that we build that up to a reasonable balance. And then third, I think we need better ways of actually calculating the structural deficit. I think we ought to look to Minnesota, where they look out 4 years as they do their fiscal planning. We just look out a couple years, and that results in a lot of game playing in terms of maneuvers that are made to push obligations off beyond the next biennium so they don't show up in the structural deficit calculations.
This sounds like yet another story where maybe short-term political considerations are trumping long-term fiscal decision-making.
Well, that's exactly it. And it's a long-standing problem that both parties have engaged in a very nonpartisan way.
Is there a way around that? I mean, you mentioned the Minnesota concept where you calculate out 4 years, so that would at least limit the extent to which politicians could push this down the road and have the bad numbers be beyond the horizon.
Yeah, I think that would help a lot to just have just a general set of principles that we put in place. Now, you can do that and still have the legislature suspend them as they did this year with the requirement to beef up the rainy day fund. But I think over time you can get to where Minnesota is, where there's just sort of just more value put on having black ink instead of red ink.
Is the budget and a potential deficit going to be an issue, do you think, in the politics this year with the election for governor and the legislature?
Well, if you look back to the last elections almost 2 years ago, the the majority party had eliminated the structural deficit. And whether you liked, whether you agreed with Casey and didn't like how they did it, or you did like Act 10, at least they did cut the structural deficit. I think they thought that they would be able to argue the same thing this year. But if the recent revenue trends keep getting worse, as it looks like it may be the case, that might be a liability for them this fall.
We'll leave it there for now. John, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's John Peacock. He's Research Director at the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families.